Hello, friend. You're out there listening to this podcast, but you never talk. We talk and talk and talk and talk, and you never say anything. I'm Jason Snell. We're here to talk about Mr. Robot. Joining me, the we I refer to there, includes Dan Morin. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Also here, Micah Sargent. Hello.
Hello, friend.
Hello, friend. And Mose is here, Philip Moselak. Hello, friend.
Hello, friend.
It's the mellowest podcast ever. It's the Mr. Robot podcast. Season two of Mr. Robot. We didn't talk about season one other than like sort of randomly here and there. But season two, we kicked it off. We're going to break it down a little bit. 2 hour premiere, or you know, without commercials, like hour and 40 or something. Two episodes, though. Part one and part two of Unmask. With the four in it, whatever. If Mr. Robot's going to have its title fun. But first thing I wanted to ask about is just sort of like the fate of Elliot, which takes up most of the first hour, where he's trying very hard to not to beat Mr. Robot. Like the one of the great revelations of season one is that Mr. Robot is him and he is Mr. Robot, and it's a representation of his father, but it's basically a personality of his. And in this episode, in the premiere, Elliot spends the whole episode like trying very hard to be like as analog as possible and to not let Mr. Robot get the upper hand. And then we get that final moment where we realize that you know, when he's going to sleep, Mr. Robot's doing stuff. And it's so what did you all think about that? Because that's a change for Elliot, like Elliot trying to kind of go straight and not deal with Mr. Robot. I thought that was really interesting, like trying to grapple like with the show's premise almost and eject it, like, no, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. And he can't help it.
Yeah, that's I think the most interesting part of it is that this whole show is based around haxing, as it were. And this, like, we're being rejected. We're, you know, I feel like when I first watched this show, the thing that I was most excited about was all the fun coding stuff and playing around with computers and making them do all of these cool things where we're breaking into data servers and stuff like that. And we start this season with like, you're not getting any of that. And it's even like his friend, you know, the audience, wants for this to kind of happen again. And so he's almost fighting everybody, really. And that's interesting to me. And the fact that he's treating like being at a computer as an addiction almost. And he's doing whatever he can to stay away from it because he knows if he gets near a computer that Mr. Robot will be able to do all of the bad things that Mr. Robot can do.
I gotta re-download the encrypted algorithm for the Skype master server.
/ flash.
And engage.
I really liked, I don't like the idea of calling it technobabble because to me, well, like, I think everybody might have different definitions of what technobabble is. But for me, that was one of the most interesting parts. That's one of the parts that I liked about The Social Network, for example, was whenever at the beginning he was, which is my favorite movie, he's going through and typing and talking about what he's doing and, you know, the SQL databases aren't working or what, I don't know what any of the terms mean, but like, I love it regardless. And so these different parts where, you know, they're actually showing this on screen, whether it's incredibly accurate or not. I don't know. I get a kick out of that stuff. I think it's interesting and it adds to it, in my opinion. But I'm not a lay person, I guess, or at least I'm a person who's obsessed with technology. So it doesn't quite apply. I wonder how a normal person feels about it.
I mean, what I would say is, as a normal person, no, sorry, fail.
Wait, you don't apply?
I don't apply at all. I was impressed with it. I think that it was the closest, the portrayal of technology on the show in general is the closest that I think you could get without it just being completely boring, which, you know, super real would be super boring. But I felt like it was in the ballpark of how this stuff works.
It was a nice balance. I mean, I think for those that were kind of on the fence that were into computers, I think there was enough there to say, okay, well, you're talking to us about social engineering, things like that, that are real things that happen.
Yeah, and having him, like, when he's there in the data center in the first episode of the first season, and he's frantically typing and all that, I mean, that felt real-ish, right? Like, again, probably not, you know, a documentary, because it's a TV show.
Right.
But it was real-ish. Like way more than it needed to be. That was my thought. Is like, wow, they put some effort into having these all be real things they're describing, right? Because on CSI Cyber or Scorpion, they would just make something stupid up and just point at it and say, yep, that happened, and then move on. And Mr. Robot was at least attempting to be real.
There's an article, and now I'm trying to find, aha, Mr. Robot, The Importance of Getting It Right. I think that's the one. I saw this kind of going back and forth, how the real hackers behind Mr. Robot get it so right.
Huh.
I'll share this article in
Slack. I see it.
No, oh, yeah, I have Slack open. Okay. I'll share that in TV just because.
Nice.
But anyway, I'm pretty sure, like I said, I haven't had a chance to read through it, but I'm pretty sure it's discussing, obviously, the people who are consulting for the show, and people were talking about how it was awesome that they took the time to do that. So seemed pretty serious about it.
On the inside track, if we talk about season one, I think we can all safely, even though there's people that have not seen season one, are we blowing spoiler horns or what?
No, I mean, let's talk. We can talk about season. We're in season two now.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I just don't want any of the nonsense.
Yeah, Mr. Robot's not real. I already said it. It's indeed not real.
It's been done. Nothing is real.
Soylent Green is made of people. Go ahead, Moz.
Did you guys like watch it and keep watching it like season one, like looking for already clues straight up? Like,
oh yeah.
Anything and everything.
You mean go back and watch it after you found out?
No, just this episode, like the whole idea of control, and I hate to even talk about this because we're talking about it.
Well,
but
we're talking about it.
Yeah, okay, we're talking about it. But like I keep looking for hints for the whole season, like what's the great twist? And that's kind of one of those things I'm just like, do I just let it flow over me, or do I start looking at it with a fine-tooth comb?
Oh, yeah, it's in your head. Well, Sam Esmail, who created the show, said that he never really intended the show to be about twists, and he was actually a little surprised that people got as taken with the plot twist in the first season as possible. So, I don't know, that may also be he's just in our heads, and he's just, there is something inside something. I'm certainly more aware that this is a show with an unreliable narrator, and that nothing we see can be believed. Like, there are several points, I'm like, I have no idea what. Well, so the these episodes end, and we'll get into this more later. But these ends with Elliot getting a call, from Tyrell Wellick, right?
Uh-huh.
Who it's also trying very hard to suggest to us might have been killed by the gun in the popcorn maker. I love that. There's gun in the popcorn. It's going to kill somebody. But
was a famous Chekhov expression.
Yes, sure. If you put a gun in the popcorn machine, you have to eat popcorn act.
It's covered in butter. And
buttery
that's really
goodness.
Inconvenient when you're trying to shoot someone.
But, when we hear Tyrell's voice at the end, I just think I don't believe anything I'm seeing. Yeah. I don't believe it. I don't know whether he's dead or alive. I don't know if that's his voice. I don't know if it's all in Elliot's imagination, because in the first episode, right, we get the whole, it drops the hammer that Mr. Robot's been out and about doing stuff. And we've been like Elliot, we've been confident that Mr. Robot is kind of under his control, and he's, arguing with him a little bit, but he's got it kind of worked out. And nope, that's totally not true. So even in the first 2 hours, Moz, they kind of did it to me, right? I mean, so I'm on guard for sure.
I'm so less trusting of everything now. And I thought that same thing as soon as he was, because that's kind of been, it seems like is Elliot's new goal is of course staying on this track, but also trying to find, Tyrell. And so that, I don't know, whenever we finally do hear him, after his hysterical laughing fit and everything else that happened, I'm like, I don't know what to believe anymore. What is real?
Yeah. Dan, what did you think about the whole conflict between Elliot and Mr. Robot being like his story? I'm going to just journal and think good thoughts and try not to have Mr. Robot be around, and he might shoot me in the head, but that's totally not real because he's not a real guy. What did you?
I think the most interesting part of it for me is the stuff that Elliot is writing in the journal, you know, in terms of like the fact that he's writing down everything that's happening here. And I tried hard to sort of get a look at it when you know, in some of those moments when you like he's writing stuff and you get the sort of extreme close-ups, and it's almost as though he's narrating what's happening with him and Mr. Robot, which is a little weird, because sometimes there's stuff that's going on there and you're like, well, I'm not sure if this is, you know, this is all in his head and yet he's writing it down. Is he creating this, or is he merely just seeing it and observing it? And so he's stuck in this very, I mean, there's not a lot of computer stuff in this first 2 hours, but in a certain way, I mean, they talk about loops, right? And a loop is obviously a very basic computer science construct. So this idea that he is looping, you know, his behavior every day and trying to stay in a predictable pattern, because loops are safe and loops are predictable, right? Like they shouldn't be jarred out of that, but he's, you know, realized that maybe that loop is inside something else. Like maybe he's inside Mr. Robot's loop and he doesn't really know what's going on. Sorry, did I just blow your mind?
My mind is so blown.
What, he's generating a log file. He's simply handwriting.
He's dumping.
Yeah.
Ooh.
We could totally turn this into computer metaphor central.
Well, yeah, and that loop, you know, what happens if it's an infinite loop is that, you know, something horrible has to break you out of it, right? You can't do it forever. Some condition, or if it's an infinite loop, you'll just have to stop the process. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you have to define some variables. And
metaphor.
I was hoping we would stop this infinite loop a while. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I think we've overloaded that
computer
class.
And program.
Abort.
And we should also mention Elliot's staying with his mom, which is also kind of funny.
Oh my goodness.
We didn't see her in season one either, right? Like, we saw her in flashbacks.
Right.
Well, yeah, we saw her in flashbacks, and she was always seemingly sort of abusive toward him, clearly abusive toward him. And, I mean, he does end up addressing this in the episode, Better the Devil You Know Than the Devil You Don't.
Yeah.
But you'd think, I don't know, that would seemingly make the problem worse rather than help the situation.
The point of it is, he says that she's the strictest person he knows, right? So
that's
like
true.
He's sort of counting on her to be the kind of being like the warden, right? Like,
yeah, keep me on the straight and narrow. Yeah, absolutely.
And so he's going to like church groups, and yeah, it's a fascinating, as you guys said, it's a fascinating sort of decision for him to take here.
Well, and in the first season, you feel like, until you realize what's going on with Mr. Robot, you feel like Elliot, when we see Elliot in the first season, he is always up to something, right? He's always up to something. He's got plans, he's got things he's gonna do. He looks unassuming, but he's got this incredible depth going on just beneath the surface. And in this, it's like the reverse of that. It's like he's trying very hard not to have anything going on as he goes about his things that aren't his business, like going to the church group and things like that. He's just trying to not do anything. And then I also am delighted by the fact that he's got his mom on one side sort of tormenting him, but also sort of keeping him honest. And then he's got the vision of his dead father. Right. Tormenting him on the other side too. It's just, wow, there's a lot.
And then his friend talking to him about Seinfeld, which is really just kind of
what do you think about that?
I enjoyed that.
That is, I mean, you could argue that that's all like a meta commentary about Mr. Robot that he's talking about.
That's what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, but it was also just hilarious. And Elliot's not even paying attention. Like, he just doesn't care. He's just there because it's a thing to do.
Well, and if I might note, and I don't know if this humor was there, but this is humor that, hey, being diverse, I got to bring this to the table. Growing up, I can remember it being a running joke that my family and other people of color don't watch Seinfeld. Yeah. And yeah. So it's kind of funny that
Friends and Seinfeld were the white people TV shows, right? And his black friend recently discovered Seinfeld and will not stop talking about it.
I just like that he's deconstructing it too, right? Like,
oh yeah,
you know, talking about how, you know, if Kramer was a real person, I'd knock him out. You know,
there's a whole episode inside a Chinese food restaurant that's and a parking lot, right? And it's like, true. It's true. No, that is. So I've always thought that Mr. Robot was good in having funny things happen too. That it's like it's not all just so serious and whispering and that was a kind of a fun moment that I felt like the audience is having more fun than Elliot is having at that point.
For sure.
Right?
I can tell you what I don't want.
Okay.
Now watching this is a smart house.
Oh my goodness! Right.
I was rethinking my lights.
So F Society takes over a VP at E Corp.
It's their general counsel.
Oh
right?
No!
Their
right, lawyer. That's right. It's she's their lawyer, and she's forced to abandon her Manhattan house and then go to the I don't even know where, like some other. Go to the country
city,
house,
right?
The weekend house, and so they can use it as the base.
But it's Greenwich, I think.
And so they have they hack her smart home, and it does like everything wrong with the smart home, and that was I thought nicely topical of like you put your computers in charge of your house, and this is what will happen.
All the wires in the walls.
That was hilarious. What am I supposed to do? Everything's in the wall. It was built that way. But like, so for those of you who use iOS devices out there who are listening to this, Apple is going to have an app called Home that comes with the next version. And I've been using the Home app to control all my different smart home gadgets. So I literally felt like I was being reflected here as she like picks up the tablet as she comes inside to try and make things work. And then it jumps back to like the 75%. That is literally been my experience as I'm using this buggy beta software. So it's like, no, I'm going to have to move out of my house too.
And then a bunch of hackers are going to take it over. I actually was flashing to I think there was an episode of the short-lived Carl Urban series, Almost Human. Where a smart house kills someone, someone uses the smart house to kill them, and I thought that's what was going to happen here, like because it just kept getting creepier and creepier with like the lights coming on and the swimming pool and the talking head,
song.
Yeah, and I was like, she's just gonna get murdered now, isn't she? But she gets away okay.
Yeah, she's fine. And as soon as Darlene touches the door, then everything stops on the inside.
And when did Darlene become this almost Mussolini type character? And where I didn't feel like they were on the losing side at the end of the first season. I was just like, where is this coming from?
So first off, I think it's really interesting that she has to be in charge now, right? Because F Society has lost its leader because its leader is Elliot or Mr. Robot, but it's Elliot either way. And he has kind of barricaded himself and separated himself. So she feels like she's got to do it. I think it's an interesting choice that they make, right? That is like, they're under siege almost. Like they need to keep doing the work, but now they've made the big hack. So I think it's maybe there are things we don't know because this is Mr. Robot. But I also thought that it was kind of realistic. Like they get that first shot off kind of when nobody was paying much attention, but now everybody's paying attention. So do they do for their next game?
And not only that, but as she points out, you know, what do they really do? Do they actually have an effect? Because the easiest thing, you know, they talk up so much of season one is based on the whole, they're going to talk up like this big event, right? And like, we're going to make this big thing happen. It's going to fix everything. It's going to reset everything, right? And none of that happens. So in some ways, you're starting to realize, okay, A, it's not as easy to dismantle this system as we thought it was going to be. And B, we have to deal with the fallout of what we did do. Like, I mean, I think this is always the inevitable parallels obviously get drawn to Fight Club, which this is clearly much of the first season was, I assume, intentional homage to. But that movie ends with kind of where the first season ends, right? So like you don't really get the follow-up of like, okay, now you've launched your giant attack and you've attempted this and it hasn't quite failed, but it also hasn't really succeeded. And where does that leave your group of radicals when you know you're sort of nominally like, okay, the ball's in your court, you've changed the discussion, but now you have to be a little more proactive and maybe build something rather than just tearing everything else down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that it's Darlene's coping mechanism in all of this. It seems like that's always been the case, that throughout it all, she was kind of like, we're doing this and we're going to keep on moving along. And, you know, it was her and her brother, another spoiler, kind of taking on everything. And when he went away because she can't like get to him and deal with him, then she's got to just got to take my mind off of it. And that's why we see her in little, you know, cutaways where she's like sad and alone in a bathroom.
She also, I mean, her brother's mentally ill. She seriously, it's clear, has evolved the skill to kind of hold things together when he can't function. And that's sort of what she's doing, right? Because obviously this is not the first time, because her reaction when he tries to kiss her in that scene, and it's like, oh, honey, you this again, huh? Right? I mean, this has, you know, he's had issues his whole life, I think. And she's like, she's the one who holds it together. And that's what she's trying to do here, is just like keep it together while Elliot is off doing something messed up again.
Yeah, he did get pushed out of a window, so you know, there's definitely there's some potential there for that being
no fault, but exactly.
But like as a sort of like up. That's how long her, you know,
that's true.
We might guess that it's been going on since then. I also think it's an interesting choice for these two episodes to separate almost all of our main characters from season one, right? Like everybody's isolated. Elliot's off with his mom. Darlene is off with F Society. Angela's off at Evil Corp. Tyrell is missing in action. You know, except with the exception of Mr. Robot, who is obviously part of Elliot, so he's not going anywhere. Like they're all doing their own little bubbles, little storylines, which I think is it's tough on a show that's if not an ensemble, at least has a lot of interlocking characters. And so to sort of separate them all at the beginning of the season is kind of an interesting choice.
Yeah. It's hard to season one was a hard act to follow too. And this is, I kind of commend Sam Esmail for having the patience to do this, because it is kind of leaving us at arm's length a little bit. Like, I know you want to see everybody talking to each other about what's gone on, but we're going to skip ahead and not show you the immediate aftermath after that one little sort of like pre-hack flashback with Tyrell and the gun in the popcorn machine, because I just like saying that. Then it's like, no, they're all going to be off doing their separate thing. You're going to see aftermath. You're not going to even see the immediate aftermath. And that's where we're going to start. And that's a very brave creative choice, I think, because it's making us wait and warm up to it again. And, I'm not surprised that this show does that.
And Elliot even says, I don't trust you. You knew things and you didn't tell me. Mm. So it's almost like this relationship with us as the viewers, like, look, there's some things I can't say now.
Well, and it's true in a literal sense, too, right? Where it's like we have seen scenes that take place between characters that are not Elliot. Therefore, we are privy to details or conversations that he is not, because we're watching a TV show.
Right.
It's so that, we're isolated in that sense as well, then, to join the isolation party, because we're kind of, he's talking to us a little bit, but hey, you used to be my friend. We talked a lot in the first season, and now you're not giving me much attention either. And oh man, does that just, it adds to this whole isolation. I think that there too, I noticed at least in part one, that there are lots of big empty spaces between dialogue, more so than I'm used to, which again just heightens this isolation, and he's very just trying to distance himself from everything.
Conversation with Gideon was excruciating.
Poor Gideon. The only legitimate good person in the whole show, and his whole company is ruined, and then he's murdered.
Kid you not, I almost fell to the floor when that happened. I was not expecting that at all.
Oh, I knew it was coming. I was expecting to get stabbed as a throwback to when Mr. Robot cuts his throat at the dinner table. And so I'm like, I'm sitting there listening to this guy talk to him. I'm like, do not trust this guy. This guy is up to no good. Yeah. I did not expect him to shoot him right there, because I just thought it was very blatant. But And so that part of it was shocking, but I had a feeling Gideon was not getting out of that scene alive.
My note says, who the F is this Brock character?
Yeah.
And then I put after that the quote, when did he leave you? And that's because I thought that he was just trying to come on to Gideon. And so I was pissed off about, or I was upset about that, that he was trying to come on to Gideon, who I thought at the time was still married. And then it turns out that he wasn't married anymore. But I was still like, I don't know who this guy is, and leave Gideon alone. He just wants to have a drink. So I was just expecting that this was going to be him trying to get him to go home with him or whatever. And then when that happened, I, like I said, I almost fell out of my chair. I was like, no, this can't happen. He's such a good guy. Why?
It was a fascinating, it's shot really interestingly too, right? Because you never really get a good look at him, I feel like. Like, he's always, I mean, I feel like in most of the frames, it seems like Gideon is more front and center. And mm-hmm. a lot of them are sort of like, he's in the other guys in the background.
The background, so. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of this show is very, I think in particular, these episodes are very well shot. The show in general tends to be a fairly interestingly shot.
Yeah.
These two episodes are no exception in that regard.
Well, continue on with the visual studies thing, but when you talk about isolation, the way this is directed, all the characters are either margins of the frames, leaving large mm-hmm. open space, right? I mean, or pulled way back so that they're small. I mean, that is definitely a thing that Mr. Robot does in general, and you definitely feel it here, that everybody's at the margins, everybody is kind of off the edge a little bit, and it puts you, I think, makes you uneasy, and also says something about those characters. I wanted to mention, just because I think it's cool, Sam Esmail, who wrote the entire first season, did he write? No, he even had a few writers work with him, but he's the creator of the show. This season, he's writing every episode, I believe, and directing every episode. I don't know. Maybe he does have some writers, but he is directing every episode, and they shot it like a movie. They shot it out of sequence, all 12 hours, like a movie, instead of doing, you know, different directors coming in and shooting their hour. So it is as close to an auteur kind of situation as you're going to get on TV, I think, at this point.
It looks a lot like Jean-Luc Godard, like with the framing of these big open spaces and like the visual composition has always been thrown.
I loved him on Star Trek.
He was part of the new wave of Star Trek captains. See,
that's right.
I brought
the next
it back
generation
around.
Of movie makers, you might say.
End loop.
So I want to mention Joanna Wellick, who is back. She's got a helper.
Thank you, Jason. Very.
She's got a sex helper who wants to have their relationship be a little bit different, and she's not interested in that. She is a fascinating character, and then she gets a mysterious gift. She's got the baby. She's pushing the baby around, and it's a music box with a cell phone tape to the bottom, and she gets a call that she doesn't answer. And that's all we get from her. But it's like, that's one of the pieces that's still out there. I mean, mm-hmm. we've seen her. She's a fascinating character from season one. We see a little glimpse of her here in a few scenes. We still don't know what happened to her husband. But that's all we get of her. I think she's so cool. So, yeah.
I really enjoy her, and that actress is good and just the right degree of creepy. And like,
so
and I love that
good
they,
it is.
I love that they output, they juxtapose it with the fact that she's, you know, she's a mother and she's raising a baby. So like, that is not typically the impression you get. Like, that's not typically what's conveyed by motherhood, right? Like, when you use that as a connotation, it's like, oh, motherhood, warm, nurturing. She is kind of not those things, and yet also maybe those things at the same time.
Joanna, yeah.
Yeah, so fascinating character. And I also really thought at the end, when the phone shows up attached to the bottom of the music box, that, and like, it was next to the baby monitor, I thought it was going to start hacking the baby monitor.
So did I! That's exactly what I thought. Yeah. I thought there was going to be some root program that pops up or something, and it was going to start hacking. And
more
home
badness.
There's always episode three.
We should note, and maybe this doesn't mean anything, but I had to note that that came right after Gideon was shot. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, but if there's some tie in there with Gideon being killed and maybe her tying up loose ends or something. I don't know, but I thought that was interesting because the phone didn't mean anything until that point.
I mean, when Elliot talks to Gideon and Gideon basically says, I think you're the one behind this and I'm going to go to the FBI. It's not a big leap, right, to assume that Mr. Robot had Gideon killed because,
yes,
right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Which is Elliot. That's one of the challenges is that this show wants us to differentiate between Elliot and Mr. Robot, these two personalities. But, you know, ultimately, it's Elliot who's doing all of this. It's just that he's dissociated from Mr. Robot. It's such a fascinating show. It really is on so many levels.
I just don't want Elliot to be a bad guy.
I know.
I think there's something to the whole... the mental illness aspect of it that really burns in me. It's like, you know, you see these people, you know, and I was trying to explain this to my son. I was like, do you know what it's like to have multiple personalities or schizophrenia and to have things in your ear and you seeing things that are really unbelievable. I mean, you couldn't deal with that in normal life. And for him to hone in and to be able to try to concentrate himself out of it, is just so, I mean, it's heroic, but it's also so sad.
I'm not sure if Elliot's condition is something that actually exists in reality, because it was, you mentioned multiple personalities and schizophrenia, and which are often conflated, but this is actually what's going on is he's got hallucinations,
yeah.
and he also seems to have this dissociative identity issue, mm-hmm. where there's right. like another person does stuff that's not him. That is yep. him. And it seems way more menacing this season, right? Way more menacing.
Yeah. Friend of the show, George Dow, a psychotherapist yes. from Canada, actually took issue with some of the mental health stuff and how it's handled in the show. So I would say that there's not quite a comparison. He's got a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah, everything is wrong with him, basically. Yeah, you're right. Because it's not one, like people who are hallucinatory tend to not be, as far as I've read, have this kind of dissociative identity. That's like a very different kind of thing, but Elliot's got it all. He's an overachiever.
He was also a self-medicator in the first season.
That's
so
true.
You never know what kind of effects that has
on
you.
Oh man. But it does make for good drama, if nothing else.
As far as we know, the drugs don't apply in this season. Well, and speaking of psychotherapy and all of that, was anyone else like, oh, she's back with his therapist? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering how he got her again, like, or to stick around at least.
With conditions, yeah. right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, and she said, yeah, because she says that, you know, they've sort of, she was very uncomfortable with where that left off last year, as she should be. And there's something where we get an idea that there's something we don't see there, right? Like there's something that he says to her that we don't know. I think it cuts away.
Yeah, she's...
She asks a question or something, and then it goes away before he ever answers it.
We're not paying attention in some ways at that point, right? Because we haven't gotten our bearings yet. It's the very, very first scene we get is with Gloria Rubin as the therapist. And she'll always be Jeannie Belay on ER to me. Anyway, but the other thing that her presence in that very opening scene does is it allows them to play the trick, which is that you think Elliot is talking to you with his voiceover, and he's not. He's talking to her. And it's later that he talks to us for the first time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I liked that was a yoink kind of moment where it was like, nothing you assume here is right on this show.
Right. Oh. And here's another question for you all. I am probably the biggest The Office fan in all of history. I've seen every single episode of that show at least 9 times. I love that show. Wow. So when I saw Craig Robinson come on.
Oh, we haven't talked about him. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we gotta talk. Like, who is he? What's he going to be doing? Craig Robinson
it's Daryl.
He's Daryl from The Office. And he's Ray in this show. And I don't know if his name is said yet, but I was IMDb.
Yeah, it is.
I think he introduced
says he's right. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. And his dog, which of course immediately got me as well. yeah, let's talk about Ray, because Ray just comes out of the blue and I'm like, does he run this ship? Because it sure seems like he does.
Is he real?
Or is he real? Is it another fake person?
Yeah, I saw another. I was just looking at some reviews and recaps and somebody suggesting, is Leon, his friend, the Seinfeld spouting friend, is he real?
Leon's fake. I think Leon's not real. Because where did Leon go after the basketball incident? He was suddenly gone, and now Ray's there. And it's
also weird that they had that like fight for it in focusing, or you know, that dispute focusing on a totally different character, and then he walks away, right, or like disappears. And it's like that seems like a random choice to portray that particular dispute between these characters who we aren't really necessarily that invested in. But if Leon is just another one of Elliot's hallucinations, maybe he's the one who was getting into the fight with the basketball players Ray defused.
Because I noticed immediately that Ray didn't ask about Leon the next time they were sitting on the bleachers. Leon was gone and Ray came back and he only talked to Elliot and was talking about how he told his wife that they were friends even though they weren't or whatever. But because in the beginning, Ray went and got the basketball and kind of stopped the argument, right? And so you'd think that he would remember Leon because he stopped the argument, but he didn't say anything about Leon that time. So I don't think Leon's real. I think Seinfeld and all of that, who knows?
Maybe Ray is real, but Ray's dog is not.
No, Jason, no.
No, that can't be right. That can't be right. I don't know. I love that the show makes us question whether every single character we meet is real or not, but I will say that that Craig Robinson's presence, not first off, really likable actor, great to see him. Mm-hmm. And then there's this whole weird feeling of like, well, is he real? And if he is real, who the hell is he? Because he comes on awfully strong, right? I mean, it's like, who is this guy?
And he knows Elliot knows things about computers.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Because he's kind of like trying to Mr. Robot him again, and Elliot's resisting. And then whenever he comes back, I'm making discoveries right now. They come back to the bleachers again. They're watching basketball, and Leon is gone. And that's the point when Ray is like, "You don't remember us talking? We had a conversation last night." So
wait a minute. Ray is the intermediary between Mr. Robot and the outside world.
That's an interesting idea that he's Mr. Robot's contact.
That's right.
Huh.
That's why Elliot doesn't really know him.
Right. He's very familiar, but Elliot doesn't know him.
And maybe that's Ray is who Mr. Robot used to engineer Gideon's death.
Yeah. Maybe so.
Ooh, yeah, because it didn't happen until after we first, or at least after the conversation had to have taken place. We talked last night, and then he's talking about how he told his wife that they're friends, but really they're not friends. And you wouldn't make friends with a contract. Wait, what would you be if you hire contract killers?
Kind of somebody, you're a broker. Yeah, you're a broker.
There you go, fixer, a broker, contract killing
death
broker.
Dealer.
A death pimp.
What is the... But there's... Wow. With a dog, though. With a cute dog.
I know. The dog is so adorable. I can't think of the dog's name, but he's like... I think he likes you. I think she likes you more than she likes
Maggie?
Me. Maybe it's Maggie.
It's a female name, but I forget. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so
Maxine. It's Maxine.
Maxine. I was close.
Because my note says Maxine is adorable and I love her.
Wait, is that...
That's a cute dog.
Maybe that character's not even real, Micah. Maybe when you wrote that down.
It's all false.
It's everybody... Max...
Did you even watch the show?
Yeah, the dog is our collective hallucination.
There you go.
So do we leave anything uncovered? I'm glad. Thanks for mentioning.
Oh, Angela. We haven't talked about Angela.
Oh, Angela. Yeah. I don't know what to make of this. I kind of didn't know what to make of Angela taking, you know, the job at E-Corp at the end of last season. I thought that kind of came out of the blue and seemed really bizarre. And here we get more of it. I still don't know where that's going.
I have a theory, which is that I think that she is... I think she is still, despite her sort of swearing off the lawsuit and saying she's happy with her job, I kind of feel like she's still probably working against them, but she's trying to,
from
like,
the inside,
climb up the inside
ladder.
Man.
She wants to do it herself. I don't think she wants the help of goodness, Antara, Antara the lawyer, because she seems like the type of person who wants to get it and take it all and do it all.
She
and
wants so revenge. Working,
exactly, yeah. And but you're not going to get revenge by going the law way. You're going to get revenge by going the dirty way.
And I think she also wants to. I think she wants to keep her out of it too. I mean, because I mean, probably at least in the first season, the impression I got of Angela is that she tends. I mean, she seemed like another largely good person, maybe not sort of as innocent in things as Gideon is, but she seemed to sort of have a moral compass.
Yeah, albeit but that was kind of crushed. That, I mean, yeah, when you see a guy's head explode in front of you and then you go back to work that day, something's definitely amiss.
Yeah, that's true. She kind of broke already, so she's on the warpath. And I mean, I think that was made clear. I did celebrate the moment when it happened, but I think it was made clear whenever her coworker threatened to go get their boss because she just hung up on Bloomberg, and then Bloomberg calls back while her coworker's gone to get the boss, and the boss comes back and she's like, "Yeah, I got Bloomberg. They agreed to everything that we want." Yeah. And she just pretends like nothing had happened.
Yeah.
She's on a war path and she's ready to take everything down, it seems like.
Well, and then what to make then of that bizarre scene after she has the talk with the lawyer and she goes home with that guy, and then she gets up in the middle of the night and watches the self-affirmations on TV. Is she trying to like convince herself that she is still a good person? Is she just worried about being subsumed into Evil Corp overall? It was an interesting and kind of bizarre scene, as so many of the ones on
Philip
the show are.
Price. Yeah, Philip Price has a way of convincing people, even though it's awful, it's the way things are done.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like, you know, thinking a little bit more about Darlene and like how she wants to push the movement, you know, think about like this, like most people, like something bad happens. We can all think in the last month how many bad things have happened, but eventually everybody becomes apathetic. Like there's no like... We don't stick with it and be like, oh, wow, that's really terrible, and keep moving forward. Eventually,
outrage fatigue.
Exactly. So I can kind of understand, like, now thinking about how Darlene was behaving, but it's the same thing with Price. He has a way of just kind of turning people to do things they know are awful, but in the greater good. In his mind.
And I think, I wonder if there's a conduit there. I mean, we saw that there was that last scene at the end of last season where we get the sort of like, this is where all of the important people sit in leather chairs with dark wood everywhere, and they drink their sherry and plot the future of humanity. And I thought there's that scene where they're meeting with like the government in Washington, right? And I feel like that is a thread that probably leads back to White Rose and the cabal of people who are powerful and all of that, that like, you know, E-Corp is still there and the government is still there and there's something going on. That's sort of like, I don't know if we'll get any resolution of that anytime soon, but I feel like that's one of our connections to like the big picture of what's going on in the world and with the U.S. government and what E-Corp is trying to do.
Incidentally, we get a lot of the news footage of the cyber attacks, including many edited versions, clearly of Obama.
They've got a guy
who
sounds like Obama, and they're trying to match his mouth in the right places, and then cut away.
Yeah, and then they're using all. I think sometimes it seems like they're also just using clips that are out of context.
It's true.
So like they have like Leon Panetta talking at one point, and it's like, this could be about anything right now, but we're you know, encouraged to think it's about the context of what's happening there. So
hey, suspend your disbelief, friends. That was really President Obama. He really got hired to do this job.
I'm reminded of
he's going to need a job next year. So
in the movie Contact, there's a scene where Bill Clinton is giving a press conference, and he's like, "Well, you know, it's just too early to tell. We're just going to have to take this carefully. It's a very sensitive situation. It's about the discovery of a secret message sent by aliens to the Earth. But you know, it wasn't really that." That when he did the press conference, so that reminded me of that a little bit. But there's also a scene where there's an extended chunk of dialogue where it's very clearly not Obama's audio, and it's an Obama-esque voice speaks that part. But it's fine. It was cool. It was fun to have the like real
Maxine
world
Maxine do that part.
Yeah, Maxine did it. She does a good Obama.
The dog starts talking. I'm out.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what I'm done too.
Son of Sam.
No, wait, because the fish already talked in the first season and you stayed around.
That's fair.
All right.
That's fair.
He draws a line
that
of dogs.
Was such a cool thing. Oh, that was great. I mean, that was pure
that trip?
Elegant. Oh, yes. Were they all eating the fish?
That was a very interesting thing. That's what I could say about it. For me,
I'm waiting for that episode this season.
This show feels like it's always one episode away from possibly jumping the shark, but like it manages to just keep or eating the fish. Yeah, it's like swerving over to the wrong lane, and then it always seems to swerve back by the time I'm ready for the next episode. All right, I'm still with you. Haven't been hit by oncoming traffic yet.
Almost got really close.
Really close. A little scary, but
all right.
Can we talk about really quickly? I don't think we touched on other than me saying it briefly, the hysterical breakdown that Elliot has. Just was anyone else? I got chills. I got freaked out whenever he just starts laughing in his very, 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 very strange way and almost crying. Oof, it's weird.
He's never laughed. That's why.
Yeah, that's probably why. Yeah. Because so he says, this is why I'm different. Sometimes my mask takes over. This is Elliot. And he's talking about Mr. Robot. And Mr. Robot asks, what do they see when they see you coming? And he says, I'm going to make you realize. Elliot says, what will you make me realize? And he says, that they see me. And Elliot kind of turns away. And you think like he's going to, I don't know, break down or the camera's going to cut away. But then he suddenly turns back and he's got this Joker-esque smile on his face. And he starts laughing hysterically. I'm like, what is happening? It was very chilling.
They do the quick cut thing there too, right? Where he's laughing, crying. I felt like they were doing some cuts as well, like the sort of quick, you know, and which is equally unsettling because it kind of bounces him through all these different emotions. I don't know exactly what to make of that other than that maybe that's just sort of the, you know, Elliot versus Mr. Robot manifesting sort of within him.
I've never seen him take it that far, though, and I was trying to understand if it was a mechanism of you know, battling, or if it was him having a genuine breakdown. Either way, he's genuinely having a breakdown, but I think you know what I mean. Like, one way is to try and combat his inner demons, the monkey on his back, which happens to be named Mr. Robot, and the other way is just like...
Great name for a monkey, by the way.
Christian Slater shall be playing the monkey.
Shall be playing the monkey on one's back, versus just like when someone is at wit's end and they have a breakdown. And it seemed more like the first part where he was almost on the defense because he's like, you can keep shooting me, but you're going to give me what I want because you're the one that's trapped inside of my head.
You're trapped in here with me.
Ah.
Ha-ha.
Ha-ha.
Ah. Well, oh, if only Elliot can trap Mr. Robot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be trap and eradicate. But yeah.
We'll
All
see.
Right. Well, we got more. There's many more episodes left to go. This is a 10 episode season that was
two-parters?
Cranked up to 12. So there's more. There's the last one is a two-parter.
Oh, okay.
But it's one hour between here and the end for that. I don't know what our schedule is going to be if we're going to try to do one every week or if we might let a couple episodes gather before we come back. And we'll have hopefully a bunch of different people talking here and there about Mr. Robot. So it's summer. We're playing it loose a little bit, but I'm sure we'll be back for more.
I heard we were going to have Maxine on. Is that true?
Maxine will be on every week, but silent.
Oh,
so you just have to tune to the right wavelength and you might hear some panting
dog whistle.
Little dog whistles. Yeah. Tune in the dog whistle and you'll notice Maxine. She'll be there in every episode. Listen carefully for the cameo from Maxine.
Great.
All right. So that wraps it up for our first TV episode about Mr. Robot, season 2, episode 1. Again, Unmask with a 4. Because why not? It's Mr. Robot.
It's unmephoric.
Yes, technically it is EPS2.0_unmephoric.tc. Of course it
sounds
is.
Sounds like a one password.
Yeah, exactly right. Don't use that as your password because now we all know it.
Leet speak for the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
All right. Thanks everybody out there for listening. Thanks to Dan Morin, Micah Sargent, and Philip Mosalak for joining me. And I've been Jason Snell. Goodbye, friend. We'll talk to you again. And if you go to sleep, we'll just talk to you again later.
Goodbye, friend.
That'd be scary.